Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, it's 10 o'clock. Actually, it's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll take your call. All you have to do is give us a call, and we'll take care of your car questions, because for the next 2 hours, that's what we're going to really do, is we're going to talk about car questions and car issues and stuff like that. So if you have a question about something you were told by a garage, or if you have a question with respect to some noise you have, or I'm really good at when there's an argument at the kitchen table. That's where I'm really good. So you're more than welcome to give us a call, and we'll do what we can. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. Been around since 1968. That's very unusual. It's the only transmission shop I know, probably in Arizona, that's been open that long. Phil and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts. They do repairs, leaks, drivability concerns, all the way through to complete overhauls. And what they produce on a complete overhaul, it exceeds meet or exceeds original equipment manufacturer specifications. And it's really easy to do that because you can always buy something better on in our industry. So nevertheless, every transmission is tested, and they have a machine that they can test it on. It's a dynamometer, instead of putting it in your car and then having to take it back out if they've got a problem. So they're at 40th Street in Washington, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Great place to start. Okay, last week, Gil calls me at 10 o'clock, and he says, "You're on in 3 minutes." I'm frantic because I think it's 9 o'clock. So I run inside the studio, and folks, I have this little bitty thing that's about as half of a piece of paper in height and in width. It's called a Comrex. I can carry it in my hand. It has a two-hour battery. I can attach to the radio station via Wi-Fi, Ethernet, phone line. So I can carry this around, and I always plug it in because I'm scared that it won't make the 2 hours and my radio show will go dead at 7 minutes before the top of the hour. So when I plug it in, I see smoke coming from the charger. So I plugged in the charger even though the thing's working. I see smoke and then I see flames. So I disconnect that and I'm praying that the unit will have enough battery power to get me to the end of the show. Then I realize I can take this business card and slide it between these two wires that clearly have touched one another, and I can keep it there. But I have to keep an eye on that little business card, because I'm thinking if they short out, the business card's going to catch fire, then the chair that it sits on is going to catch fire, and Gil's going to have plan B. So that's how we went through the show. So at the end of the show, I take it out into the shop, and I kind of take this thing apart, and I find the two wires, and I solder them to two new wires, and I put heat shrink on them, and I make all the connections and improve everything, and when I'm done, it doesn't work. Now, I do the schematic of the charger. I look at it, and it's got four pins in it, and I want you to picture the clock now, 11 and 5, and then, of course, 1 and 7. So you can see that they're diagonal. So I check the two of the pins, and they have 24 volts, which is what the charger says it should have. So I plug it in and take it off, and I check everything 10 times over again, and I can't get this thing to light up. The battery's stone dead, and I work on it for 2 days. 2 days. I take it apart looking for an internal fuse. I check the power, and I can't find one anywhere except it's like, I don't know, $150, and it's from the manufacturer. So I'm using the specifications on the charger and the plug. I need to know what kind of plug it is. And I'm looking everywhere, and I can't find anything. So Sunday afternoon, I'm sitting in my workshop in the barn, and I'm crying, and I'm drinking as many beers as I can. And Renee, my wife, walks in, and she says, "You haven't got it yet, have you?" And I said, "No." And she's looking at it, and I'm thinking to myself, what are you going to do? So she's looking at it, and she says, "Well, is it possible that the two wires come out of here you crossed?" Oh, God, honey, you don't think I can tell the difference? Well, those two wires that came out of there were bare. And I said, well, the two that they connect to are black. She says, no, one has a white stripe and one doesn't. You know where this is going. I said, okay, honey, yeah, okay. So she leaves and I'm going, she's right, it has a white stripe. So I cut the wires downstream about a foot away from the charger. I flip them. I just temporarily connect them. I plug it into my Comrex. And the red light comes on, and within an hour the green light comes on, which means that the batteries are charged. And I haven't told her that she's right yet, and I don't intend to either. I'm going to tell her that I had plugged it into a dead socket. Because I, just like most other men, cannot admit when we're wrong. But she would know which end of the solder gun to use. But she is a wonderful wife and a wonderful cook and a wonderful mother and wonderful driver. All the stuff I'm not. But I'm not going to tell her that she was right. But today, ooh, baby, I have my chargers all repaired. And it, in the area where it had bent back and forth, the cable, now I have this heat shrink over the top of it, which makes it sturdy, which means it can't bend. And I know this charger circuitry by heart. So, don't tell her, okay? Don't tell her that she was right. That's what I spent all, what virtually, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday on last week. Is, and I was scared I wouldn't be able to be on the radio, so I was making arrangements to drive from Payson down to the studio in Phoenix and doing it live from the studio, because that was kind of plan B. Okay, we're talking about cars, and what's important about cars is that you just know, you don't have to know anything about cars. You have to know what the right questions are. One of the things that bothers me in our industry is we're always coming up with something fancy. And the fancy part benefits the repair side and not you. I'll give you a good example. A lot of facilities, now there's three different kinds of markets. There's chain stores, which typically there's a manager on site. You'll never find the owner on site. Then you've got an independent repair shop like mine, and you're going to probably find the owner on site. Then you have a dealership. So there's three. An independent shop, a chain store, and a dealer. All of them are coming up with this free oil change idea. So you've been an established customer, Mrs. Jones, and we have a free oil change. We'd like you to come in every 3,000 miles, and we're going to change your oil, and it doesn't cost you nothing. But behind the scenes, it's going to cost you everything, because we can't do that for free. Number two, this is called a reoccurring sales opportunity. We get a shot at your car every 3,000 miles. We can look it over. Mrs. Jones, you got a little bit of inside wear, which tells me that the lower ball joint's going bad, and of course you got 60,000 miles on this. And if we're going to do one, we need to do two. Because you have four ball joints. You have two uppers and two lowers, but the symptoms on this one tire that has a little bit of abnormal wear would indicate the ball joint's bad. So let's go ahead and do both of them, and we'll do one alignment, and you'll be set. Many of you will figure that out. And many of you will accept that and go ahead and do it. So I have a couple of comments. First of all, there's three kinds of oil. There's conventional, which is what we had during the 40s, 50s, 60s, and all the way up until, shoot, the 2000s. All of a sudden, we came out with a semi-synthetic and a synthetic. Now, each one of them has different properties, each one of them has different qualities, but they all lubricate your car. But the most important part of these three oils is how long you can run them. A conventional oil is 3,000 miles. We've all been brought up with that. You change your oil every 3,000 miles. Our parents and their parents, it's always been a 3,000-mile oil change. Then Mobil 1 came out in 1979, and they said our oil is synthetic and you can go 25,000 miles. Well, at the time, I was running a Mobil gas station, and I can tell you, I don't know how many motors that came in on a tow truck that were just toast. People were under the impression you put in 25,000-mile Mobil 1 and you didn't have to change your oil or do anything for 25,000 miles. Well, most of them didn't make it past about 4,000 or 5,000 miles before they seized up because they had consumed oil like normal cars do, and it seized up the engine. Of course, the red light came on and the warning lights came on, but maybe the radio station was too loud, or maybe the grandkids in the back seat were misbehaving. I don't know. I don't care. So your car, if it's north of 2010, it's entirely possible it calls for a synthetic. If it's a synthetic, you're going to have a free oil change that they pay. You normally charge $80 to $110 for. You don't think that they're going to try to make up their money on finding stuff wrong with your car? And inevitably, it's what I just described. You have little abnormal wear on the inside of one of your front tires. It's not likely you're going to know the difference. And that does match a ball joint. But in reality, 60,000 miles may not be it. It could be out of alignment. And when the bottom ball joint wears out, it usually kicks the bottom of the tire out, which wears the inside edge. But there's other reasons. So be careful. Just be careful. Semi-synthetic is a 7,500-mile oil change, and a synthetic starts at 10, and depends on if you own a Mercedes or not, it'll go to 15. So why are we putting a synthetic oil, which is what your car calls for? And we should probably take that into consideration, and most of us that are smart about it, we're going to use the oil that your car manufacturer calls for. And it's written right on the oil cap. 1050, or no, you won't see a 1050, a 020, a 030, a 1030 synthetic. There's and in diesel, it's going to be a 540. So why would we change your oil at 3,000 miles when you have a 10,000, 12,000, 15,000 mile oil in there? So look at the financial aspect of it. That's all. Just look at that. If there's an issue with your car, you can say, is this a safety issue? Am I going to make it home? Can I drive to Flagstaff to see my kids? Ask those questions, which will give you an idea of what they think.
1 minute.
Then get a second opinion. You can go to any kind of garage in town. You're not Monday morning or Friday afternoons. And I have a simple thing to ask you. Would you send somebody out and tell me if I have any abnormal wear on the front of my tires? Most of us will walk out and do that. Now, you're not going to borrow one of our technicians for 30 minutes. But to walk out and look at abnormal tires, you get down on one knee, it's no big deal. It's just no big deal. Virtually every garage I know the owner's at, and I've been around since I graduated high school in 72, so I know a lot of the garage owners, and they're good guys. There's a lot more good guys than there are bad guys. So I can't imagine any of them not walking outside. They might set some kind of parameters on you. Say, hey, I'm going to let him use you. You can use him for about 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, but he's got a car that we got to get out of here. So that's kind of the conversation you may have. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll come back. Nobody's called in. We'll talk about other pitfalls when you have your car serviced. And most of us do it right. I would say 65% of the shops in town are going to do it right. They're going to give you ideas on what you might be facing. They might give you ideas on what you need now and why. But most of the times, those now things have a symptom, a clunk, a pull. Air conditioning doesn't work. I'm adding coolant all the time. I've got a spot on my driveway I never had before. Those kinds of things. There's going to be some obvious symptoms that you know about. So 602-508-0960. So, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday, we're here from 10 to 12 talking about cars and car repair problems, and you're always welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. Kurt's Automotive is at I-10 or I-17 in Bell Road, northeast corner. I've known Kurt and Eric, his number one person, for a very long time. I've sent people that had problems to them, and every single time, they've handled it to my and the customer satisfaction. The customer's first, Mark second. So they're not obligated to do anything. I just simply say, take a look at this and tell me what you think. This is what they were told. This is the estimate they were given. And sometimes they say, yeah, that is a problem, and the estimate's fair. Sometimes they say, we disagree, and here's what we think, and here's the price. So what my answer is, go talk to the customer and show them what you got and tell them. So I'm comfortable. Kurtz is a great place. Kurtz Auto Repair has ASC certified technician, and many of them are masters. I-17 and Bell Road, northeast corner. Harry, good morning to you.
Good morning. Hey, that is a real tale of woes you have for last week.
Harry, if you're going to make fun of me, I'm going to hang up on
you.
Oh,
I'm not. Hey, I've had the same problem. It's a good thing Renee has sharp eyes. So.
Oh, I agree. It's one of those things where I'm not going to tell her, and neither are you, Harry.
Well, you don't have to. Every woman that's listening to this is dialing up her cell phone.
You know, You know, I'm hoping. I'm hoping not, Harry. I'm hoping not. But nevertheless, it's just one of those things, you know. She just guessed, and that's my salvation, is she just guessed. That's it.
Yes, right.
Yep. Well, thank you. Is that all you called for, is to aggravate me?
No. I just had to ask you a question.
Okay.
You know, we don't carry spare tires on our vehicles and stuff, or if something breaks, maybe an investment in that extra charger might be a good idea, because this is kind of a key thing for your, you know, for your operation.
Yeah, most of the inverters or transformers or whatever you want to call them, the charge boxes, are on the internet. They're $20. This one was, I think, around $100. I spent so much time on this. I wish I just would have bought a new one, but it wasn't available till Monday. And I was scared to death that I would plug it in and find out it still didn't work. So I knew then that the charger wasn't the problem. And I thought, well, I smoked the unit, and the unit's like, I don't know, $4,000. So it gives me lots of flexibility. I can do the show from your living room if your Wi-Fi is good. But it's just one of those things. It's never happened before. And frankly, it's Gil's fault. So I stand by that.
He was telling me he knows nothing about it.
No, that's not true. He knew long before 10 o'clock that I wasn't checked in. It's not his fault. It's my fault. I was lubing the doors of my truck. I want to tell you something, Harry. In the hinge of your truck, typically there's this little pin that comes up from one of the hinge plates. And on there's a roller that spins. So when you open your door, you have a comb on there, which is this piece of metal that has divots in it, progressively bigger or smaller. So you open it, you can open it and look at it, you can see it. I am trying to get mine from cracking really bad when I open and close the door. I worked on it for about a half an hour. I lubed it and cleaned it and lubed it and cleaned it time and time and time again. So I thought, you know, I ought to go over to the passenger side and take a look at it. So I look at the passenger side, and this little post and this little round thing that spins on it are different. So I take a picture of that side, go around the other side, I'm looking at it, and the pin is higher. And so I take a center punch, and I put on top of the pin, which is serrated at the bottom, and tick, 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 and the son of a gun opens and closes just perfectly. So then I clamp it with some vice grips, and I get underneath it with a center punch, and I hit on the bottom of this pin to kind of swell it like a mushroom. And that's what took me 2.5 hours to figure out, is the hinge on my door was, this little rotating pin was loose. So I'm going to go ahead and pretend this is Catholic Church confession, and that's the two that I had happen last week.
Hey, I got a question, though. About oil catch cans and oil separators.
Okay.
I know in the past you haven't, you know, expressed too much faith in those or whatever, but with these new engines and stuff with a high pressure injection, and I've got a Ford with a twin turbo deal, and they don't seem to have completely cured the problem Ford has it, you know, getting gunk on the intake valve. So what can you do? And it doesn't seem anybody has any, you know, any. You have cleaners for that or whatever? Is that a real involved deal?
Well, first of all, that's a big deal, but it's not in my world. Yeah. I don't think we've ever seen one, and we have we have other cars out there that have what we call intake valve deposits. And they have pictures on the internet, and they have all this fancy stuff. And yes, they'll sell me a cleaner, they'll sell me the equipment. I pay a lot for the equipment, and then I have to buy the product from them because no one else knows what the product is. Okay, the symptom of carbon on the backside of the valves is typically that it's going to absorb a lot of the fuel, so you'll have extended cranking. So instead of then it's going to that kind of a thing on a cold morning. The second issue is that typically it's because of valve guide issues. And we're leaking oil down the valve guide, and oil shouldn't really be dripping off the end of the valve cover on the back of the intake valve. Not only that, is on the back of the intake valve, as you well know, we're sucking on that area. So intake valve is we're sucking. The exhaust valve is hot gas is coming out. and normally, if we have oil there, we don't care. So we have all these dynamics, and if you don't have the symptoms, then don't do it. And there are times we can stick a camera down through the valve cover and look at the back of the valves, but a lot of times, to be honest with you, I probably do that once a year and that's it. I'm asked to do that a lot, but we're not interested in that. If you don't have the symptoms and all you're doing is diagnosing your vehicle over the internet, then we're not going to charge you to waste our time and your money. So
as a preventative deal, it's not a good thing. Because I know if you cut into that positive crankcase ventilation system, which is what you're doing, I guess, it's not CAFE certified, and most of these ones you see, and I'm sure that if you go in for warranty and you have one of those, they're going to look at that.
Okay, I'm up. Stay right there. Yes, there's a warranty issue. We'll be right back.
1 minute.
Oh, hang on just a minute, because Mark was bailing a little early. You're right. The positive crankcase ventilator, the PCV valve, draws fumes off of the engine, off of the valve covers, and it sucks it into the intake manifold to be returned to the engine. And yes, the intake valve is going to open. We're going to have a little bit of oil on the PCV valve, what's coming in on the PCV valve, which is the fumes off of the engine crankcase. So yes, you're right. If you're going to be under warranty, you need to be careful. But in reality, I think you need to go talk to your service writer at the Ford dealership and ask him how many times he's seen this and ask him what he thinks the fix is. And here's why I'd say that. Because, oh yeah, we see that all the time. And the fix is $250 every time we do an oil change. Then we can discuss that. But that'll tell you what you need to know. 602-508-0960. Hang on, Harry. If you have another question, we'll tell you in about 4 minutes. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem here every Saturday, 10 to 12. We're talking about car repair problems. We got Terry, and I'm going to finish up with Harry. Terry and Harry, but Harry's first, and then we have three lines open, 602-508-0960. Harry, I have consulted with experts. Do you want to know what they said?
What did Renee say?
Renee said that, first of all, we do have an intake valve problem. It's not something that the internet makes it up to be at all. With direct ignition, we are now not spraying the fuel or not having the fuel on the back of the intake valve. So as a result of that, we have oil from the guide, and we don't have any gasoline to wash it into the engine. So yes, everybody's saying they do GMs far more than Fords. They're all direct ignition cars, and the industry hasn't figured out how we're going to do direct ignition, because we've used that gasoline to rinse the oil off the back. So, folks, the valve is closed, and there comes a time where the engine wants fuel. We open the valve, and then there is gasoline and air is introduced at that point. Well, as the gasoline goes through the chamber, it washes the back of the valve off because we have oil in the stem of the valve. So as the valve opens and closes, we need to lubricate the stem. So that little bit of oil runs down into the backside of the valve and creates the problem. So only one guy said he's done it on a Ford, and I think yours is a 3.6 or something like that.
And, yeah, 3.5.
Yeah, 3.5. So we have no suggestions for you, but we really – I don't believe that it's in your best interest to decide to do any maintenance on that. I think you run it hard every once in a while, and I think you probably do.
Well, I don't drive as much as I used to with the coronavirus deal, so
yeah.
The mileage is not on like it probably would normally would be.
Well, call Renee, and she'll come over and hot rod that truck for you.
So. Yeah, but she keeps hitting curbs and stuff. That's tough on tires and
wheels. We just put a new set of tires and wheels on there, and one of the reasons was I said, why are we doing tires and wheels on this again? She says, well, you've hit a couple of curves, and I said, I haven't driven your car in 100 years. So I said, go look at my truck, and you'll tell that you can see. She says, your tires hang over the rim. So anyway, she's been around the car guy too long. Carrie's got to run. Terry, you're next.
Hi. All right. We are looking at two different cars to buy, and from a repair standpoint, I guess, is the information I need from you.
Okay.
We're looking at a Subaru Forester or a Hyundai Tucson.
I'm going to catch a lot of flack for this. That's okay. You asked for my opinion. A Subaru is a 1% car. 1% of all the cars on the road are Subaru. The people that drive them, they love them. They never break down. They're really fine. Do I sound like Donald Trump? I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that live and die by the Subaru. I'm not a fan of the Subaru. First of all, they're underpowered. Second of all, their fuel economy, they have good fuel economy. Everybody thinks they last forever, and that's not true. But if when you're going to give me the Subaru Forester and the Hyundai, I'm taking the Hyundai every time. It is okay. True that the Hyundai and its sister, and I'll think of it in just a minute, the Hyundai and the other import, they were big pieces of dog manure when they first came out.
I know. My brother had one.
they
hated it.
Yep. They were terrible. Today, the quality of the car, the quality of the engine, the transmission, the air conditioning systems, the leather seats, the tires and wheels and the brakes is on a 1 to 10 scale, in Mark Salem's opinion, is an 8.5 or a 9. So,
okay.
Now, wait a minute. Whose side did I side with, you or your husband's?
My husband.
I'm sorry.
I always thought the Subaru was a safer car.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't know about a safer car, but let me tell you what I think safe is. Safe is this: heavy, big. You don't want to hit a Suburban with a Subaru. You want to hit a Suburban with another Suburban. So Renee drives an Edge, and she wanted something smaller, but we decided not to. Mark drives a one-ton truck, so Mark doesn't want to get hurt. Plus, I can't pull a horse trailer with the Subaru. So I think you'll be happy with the creature comforts, the technology, and the long life of the Hyundai more than the option you gave me. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, ma'am. You're welcome. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm assuming, Gil, because you haven't yelled any bad words in my ears, that you don't have a caller.
We do, but after the break.
Okay, after the break. I also want to remind you that you can hook up with me on Facebook. We typically talk just about cars. I'm not into politics. I'm not into anything that's not, you know, car related. So I am on Facebook, and if you are too, then give me a call. We'll be back in a minute. Forty-three minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here for 2 hours, and so we'll be here till noon. 602-508-0960. Folks, the shops that I recommend to you, I truly do, and you have nothing to fear. If you have a problem there, I'm going to be involved. Either I'm going to fix your car and fire the shop, or the shop's going to fix your car with a happy face, or we're going to come to some kind of an agreement. But one way or another, you're going to be made whole. As long as you're right, then you're going to be made whole. So one of the shops is Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Never been in their shop asking them to fix a car twice. Never. So 38th Avenue and Indian School, if you're anywhere in that area, then my suggestion is Larry Harker's Auto. Those guys are really, really good. So we got done with Terry. We're going to go to Keith. Keith, good morning.
Morning, Mr. Salem. I have a Ram 3500 2016 dually, regular cab, and I pull about 10,000 pound trailer weight with it.
Okay.
And it's rated to pull up to 16,000.
Okay.
And I'm at 43,000 miles on it, which is low mileage, but probably 20,000 of that 43 or more is just trailer pulling.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, honestly, I haven't looked at the owner's manual for transmission fluid change yet, but what would you recommend, and would you recommend the band's torque be adjusted while they're pulling the pan and putting a new filter and fluid in it? At what mileage pulling 10,000 pounds around, do you think?
Okay, well, I pull a lot more than you do, and especially when I'm hauling my wife and her girlfriends around. So I can answer it for you. I want you to pull the dipstick, and I want you to just touch the end of a dipstick to the chrome somewhere, front bumper. And if you can see right through it and there's no contamination in it and it's night pink and pretty, then it's not ready. You can also smell it.
Okay.
And if you smell burnt, no, yes. No. But I think I'm going to turn your question around. Mark, what do you haul? And I haul bobcats and tractors. I haul cows and horses. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually weighing more than you are. And have I done mine? And mine's a 12. Mine's a 12 1-ton. Have I done my tranny service? And the answer is no. Next time it goes in, it will, but I'm at 110,000 miles. So, and adjusting the transmission? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You have far more risk of doing that than not doing that. When you, there's symptoms, that's fine. But you're from the old school, and that's okay. We used to do the bands, but we don't do that anymore. And we don't do any adjustments unless we have a symptom, and we know that adjustment will fix the symptom. So, you know, and you're going to get, let me make one more suggestion to you. You're going to do a service first. Then we need to pull the pan and the filter, and that way we get all the metal that ends up in the pan and the filter because of the transmission polishing itself. My suggestion, and you're only going to get it for the 10 quarts. The next time you do a service, which is 60 to 80,000 miles later or 100,000 miles later, forget the filter, forget the pan, and let's flush it. So we're going to disconnect the two cooler lines. We have machines that pump in new, and the lines are clear, so you can see the clear going in. You can see the slightly brown coming out, and you just keep flushing until what color goes in comes out. You're done. So
now,
I would do that.
Thank you. One last question,
okay.
Real quick one here. I've noticed that the outside two, both sides, outside rear two tires on the dually are wearing at about, looks like about twice the rate of the inside two tires of the dually. And I was started to think, could that be, I do a lot of city driving here, when I'm turning corners, that outside tire is spinning slightly faster than the inside tire, so it's sort of scuffing the tire when you make a turn. Is there any other reason why those two outside tires would wear faster than the inside two?
There's two reasons. Number one, they're different sizes, and that happens every once in a while. And number two,
they're factory.
That doesn't mean anything.
Tires.
That doesn't mean. Next time it goes in for an oil change, ask them if you can go out when the car's on the lift. Have them check to verify that the inside tires are the same size as the outside tires. That's the time to do it. And number two, inflation. It can also be that it's really important that you make sure your trailer is level when you're towing it. Level. We need the trailer level.
Yeah.
So if you've got the back end down and the front tires are half off the ground, you're probably going to get abnormal wear on both axles, because you can go up and down the B-line all day long, and you see these trucks that are half-ton pulling trailers that are three-axle. You see trucks with the tongue sitting on the ground and the butt end of the trailer up in the air, and we're wearing the front tires right off that trailer. Now you got me all wound up about trailers and trucks, but as long as the truck and the trailer are level, I don't know, but I'd get a gauge and check it, and if there's 1/32nd difference between the two of them marked at the same side, that wouldn't be anything I would be concerned about. So I think the measurement of the difference would be important. Got to run, Keith. Thank you very much. Those are questions I don't hear very often. George, you're up next.
Yes. Got a 2003 Nissan Frontier V6 with 130,000 miles on it. Essentially is worn out to the point where it's beginning to smoke now. It started with stuck lifter or worn lifter somewhere. So anyway, I'm doing a little bit of thinking out of my league here, but what about what I hear about takeout engines as a replacement?
We do that. It's important to know that the parts and the engine is not assembled by Nissan. All the parts are made by everybody else, and they may be assembled at one location, but the fact of the matter is that there's nothing Nissan about that motor except the box it comes in. So to answer your question, I will buy engines from a variety of other vendors before I go to the dealer. It's not because we have a bad relationship. It's just the price and the warranty is typically better than I can buy anywhere else. Now, at 130,000 miles, let me ask you, is the smoke blue or black?
Blue.
Okay. And how much oil are you consuming in 3, 4, 5,000 miles?
I'm in Geysila, and every trip to Payson and back is about 5 or 6 ounces.
Okay, so I want to know on the dipstick, you got an add and a full mark. So do you start with the full mark, and then when you get there, you can see the width of the full mark? It's dropped?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. This is the kind of conversation. Now, does it ever not smoke, or is it just on startup first thing in the morning?
No, that has just started in the last week, the last 2 or 3 trips to Payson.
Okay.
And it's by the time I get home.
Okay, okay, fair enough. You haven't started Fallon spark plugs because this is something that just started. I would want to check the PCV valve system out because the PCV valve system is supposed to vent the pressure in the crankcase, and if we have that system down, then the pressure inside the engine builds, and one of the after effects of that would be that you're going to consume oil. The last time you had an oil change, did we change the weight or the kind of oil?
No, mistakenly did one time, went instead of 10:30, went to 5:30.
Okay.
But, that didn't last long.
Okay, and so you're using the 10:30. Is it a conventional or a synthetic?
Synthetic.
Okay, fair
Mobile
enough.
Mobile one.
Okay, okay. All right. I'd want to look at the spark plugs. If you brought that into my shop, I'd want to pull the spark plugs. I'd want to see which cylinder it is or if it's all the cylinders. I'd want to see how much oil is deposited on the spark plugs. I'd want to know where the problem's coming from long before I start working on that motor. I might even say, hey, I'm going to try a 30-weight oil change, and I want you to drive 3,000 miles with 30-weight in it, and I want to see what that does.
Straight 30?
Straight 30. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what the temperatures have been in Geysila, but the other day when I left Payson, I live outside Payson. It was 10 degrees. I use a 040, a synthetic in my truck, a 540, I should say. Right. And so I just think there's more to it than this, especially because it just started. And
like I said, it started at about 80,000 miles with the noisy lifter.
Okay. I'm not concerned about the noisy lifter. If the valves are too tight, then you backfires, and if they're too loose, you have a noise. After it warms up, you have a noise, or when it's cold, and then it goes away when it warms up. I'm not worried about a lifter causing an oil consumption problem. It's going to be rings, or we're sucking oil out of the intake because we have a bad intake gasket. The PCV system is down. Those are the typical one. Notice I didn't say rings, but a quick compression test would tell us everything we need to know. We just do all the cylinders, and if we've got a problem with one of them, then typically we'd add a drop or two of oil into that, run it again. If everything is fine, then we know the oil we put in the cylinder sealed the rings, and probably we have one broken. So you have lots of possibilities, but long before you do a motor, there's some checkout that needs to be done. Let me ask you, without saying names, do you have Payson do your repairs or Phoenix do your repairs?
Payson.
Okay. There's a place called Coyotes. I don't know who you use, and I don't care. The only one in Payson
I used to go to Affordable, but Chris has been long gone. So.
And Affordable was great. He's at the Big O store right now. So Chris is
still there. Okay.
Chris is great. He was a great technician. Great technician. I would have loved to have him work for me. But Dan is the one I have chosen to identify as somebody I want to recommend. He's done my mother-in-law's car not too long ago. And I must admit, we screwed up a motorhome differential as bad as anybody could. And we hauled it from way up on 40 to Payson. And then I went and talked to Dan. Never met him before. A Coyote. And I said, I need you to bail me out of this thing. He did. He did. I told him I'd pay all of his fees. I had another differential shipped. He reassembled it. He did it right. The motorhome went back to Colorado. I paid all the bills, and I was really impressed with him. And he didn't know who I was other than I had a shop, and we screwed up this differential some fierce. And so I really like him, and I've referred a lot of people to him, and that's my favorite shop. That's all there is to it. But you're right. Chris at Affordable was a good guy. Got to run, George. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. If you're close by, you'd like to talk, then that's fine. 602-508-0960. Action Autos at I-17 in Deer Valley in Phoenix. I've known Tom since 1986, 87, 88. He's been in business since 1967. So it was before that, before he went to business, because he used to be a salesman for some car diagnostic equipment, and that's where I met him. He knows the difference between right and wrong. He's been around a long time. So if you're in the area of I-17 and Deer Valley Road and you want a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that's been around serving the Deer Valley area and the North Phoenix area as well, and I was wrong about that, it's 1983, so it was earlier, just slightly earlier than that, then he has ASE Master Certified Technician. He might be a good shop for you to try. If you have a shop you love, stay there. If you have a shop that you've done a lot of business with, stay there. If you're looking for a shop or you haven't found a shop, then maybe one of mine would be appropriate. You can also find all those lists of shops on marksalem.com. Mark with the K, Salem like the cigarette.com. That's the website. And we also have a lot of FAQs in there. And going back to Keith with his dually and then George with his Nissan, we have an oil consumption FAQ as well. And it talks about some of the tests you run. And oil consumption is we're using oil. Now, there are times that you're going to use a little oil, unusually, because it depends on the load and the speed and all that kind of stuff. So if all of a sudden you put a trailer behind your Frontier and you haul it to Colorado and it's all uphill pretty much, then you might consume oil. It's also appropriate for a car to use a quart of oil somewhere around the 5,000, 7,000 mile range, depending on what oil you use. So the car is going to consume oil. The truck is going to consume oil. In my case, I hold 12, 14 quarts. And so if we consume some oil, it's not likely to drop below the ad mark on the dipstick. But it's not uncommon for me to pull the dipstick and be at the ad mark and not be concerned, because the ad mark is one quart away from the full mark. So I'm not real worried about that. Those are the kinds of things that you can talk it over with your shop. But if the answers to the shop are, we need to start taking that head apart and finding that oil consumption problem, or I better bid an engine for you, or the question is I think you should bring it in and have us change your oil more often. If it's real self-serving, you might want to get a second opinion. So if you'd like to join us, we've got another hour of Car Talk, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem, and I am an ASE Master Certified Technician and have been for probably 20 years. I run a shop with 20 bays, and I have some ASE Masters that work for me, and we have a great relationship, and they know right from wrong, and so do I. And we know when to raise our hand and say we've made a mistake. And we do, just like all the other shops in town. We make mistakes every once in a while, but hopefully we do a good job in making our customers happy. We'll be back right after this. Four minutes after the hour. Ooh, my voice didn't work. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're here for another hour talking about car repair problems. Let me tell you real quick about Automotive Dynamics in Sun City. They've been around since 1982. I've known Chuck Nide since probably 1979. His son, Derek, kind of runs the Auto Dynamics shop. They're on 99th Avenue, north side of Grand, 99th Avenue on the west side. So if you're in Sun City, you got lots of choices. If you ask Mark Salem, I say Automotive Dynamics is the place you should go. Keith, if you're still here, I want to tell you that there's a few guys that have my cell phone number, and one of them just texted me, and he said, hey, Mark, there's no bands on his or yours transmissions to adjust. So, Keith, you called about a Ram 3500, a 2016 dually, and you were going to talking about a transmission service and if you should have them adjust the bands. Well, you have a 2016, I have a 2012. We have two trucks that are the same, and that's why he says there's no bands on his car, which he meant Keith, or your car to adjust. Then he used a lot of bad words and questioned whether I had any ability to talk about cars on the radio. So I won't read that to you. But, Keith, forget about the band issue. That's not going to happen. In addition to that, what else have I got to tell you? The car repair business is a difficult one, but don't make it more difficult as a customer. Don't tell us how to fix your cars. Give us the symptoms. You just have to ask, are you going to fix my symptoms with your repair? Do you promise? That's something you need to ask. Because if it's a guess, you need to find out. So they say, well, we don't know, but this is the first step. And so you can regurgitate that and say, well, let me get this straight. You want $312 to do something, but you're not sure it's going to fix my symptoms. Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to pass. I think I'm just going to drive it for a while more because, gosh, I'm not comfortable with the $312 guess. And that's what it is. It's either a fix or a guess, folks. That's it. Fix or guess, or actually maintenance. So maintenance is on a world all of its own. Harold, good morning. How can I help you this morning?
Hi, Mark. Great show.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you about an issue I'm sure you face periodically. You can't watch TV today without getting bombarded with these car repair insurance ads. They'll, like, scare you to death to tell you it costs $66,000 to replace a motor or $4,000 to replace a transmission or on and on and on. And I have had researched this to some degree, and I've gotten very mixed reviews on the cost effectiveness of these plans. Could you talk to us about that a little bit?
Wow. Can you tell that you've just wadded up my underwear? I'm not mad at you. I have so many comments. First of all, I don't know about the rest of you, but if I don't get two calls a day telling me that they know that my new car warranty has just expired, Mark doesn't own a new car. My wife's is, I think, a 14 and mine's a 12. So they just bug me to death. I block every call and they still call back with the next phone number. Number two, the numbers they use are flat-out bull excrement. They talk about, oh, an engine can cost you $6,000. We haven't put an engine cost $6,000 in 10 years. They're all a hell of a lot more than that. So they talk about stupid numbers that don't even reflect our industry. Number two, here's what happens. You bring your car in and you need a rack and pinion assembly. They tell us they're not going to authorize it, but they're going to have a rack and pinion shipped to us. Rack and pinion is part of your steering. So we say, wait a minute, you told us to take the rack and pinion out. Yes, we did. We wanted you to give us the serial number on. That's fine. The car can't steer. We got half the front end off this thing. So what are you going to do? Well, we're going to send you a new rack. When do we get it? The next 3 or 4 days. No. That car's on the rack. It's going to tie up a rack for 3 or 4 days while we wait so you can save $100. Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, we're not doing this again. Put him on the blacklist. That customer's not going to come in. So they want to send parts, and they come in a plain wrapper. We don't even know where they came from. Then we say, well, who's going to warranty this? Oh, you are. No, I'm not. I didn't make a dime on the part. You sold them the part. You warranty the part. Then they go, well, we don't like your labor charge. We want to cut it in half because we think you're too high. You don't have an agreement with me, Mrs. Jones or Mr. Terrible. He brought it in. Your customer brought it in. You deal with the customer. You call the customer and say, you need to find somebody that's not $125 an hour, that's $59.95 that we know your market holds. It is one fight after the other. Then they go, after you're done, you call in and say, okay, I want payment before I take this, you know, give this car away. Well, it'll take 4 or 5 days for us to process the payment, and 4 or 5 days doesn't work. It never happens in 4 or 5 days. We might be paid in 25 days. So all the things they cite on TV is bull. All the prices they cite on TV is bull. I've never seen anybody make money on those kinds of things except one person, and that's the guy who sold you the policy. I don't like them. I've never – well, in 1993, I bought a motorhome. I bought an aftermarket warranty, and the very first thing that happened was – oh, and this happens all the time – is the water pump went out. So I called him up and said, I got a water pump out. I have this aftermarket warranty. And he goes, send us all your flush receipts that you flush the cooling system. I said, it doesn't call for a flush until 100,000 miles, and this is at 80. No, according to our books, it's less than that. I don't care what your book says. Mine's the owner's manual. It says Ford on it because it's got a Ford chassis. No, I'm sorry. If you don't have necessary documents for maintenance, then we're not going to cover it. A third of the time we hear that. Now, here's what happens. We have to be the bad guys to break the news to our customer. So our customer hates us when really it's that person on the phone that they should hate. So they send crappy parts to us and want us to install them. They want us to warranty them. We ain't warranty parts that we didn't make a dime on. It takes them forever. And the guy they send to look at it was born either yesterday or 400 years ago and doesn't even have grease on his fingernails, but he's going to tell us that we've diagnosed it wrong. Can you tell where I'm coming from, Harold?
Yeah, very clearly. That's kind of like the impression I've been getting from a lot of people.
We don't even do them anymore. We don't even do them anymore. I am sorry, Mrs. Jones. I love you as a customer. I notice that you've been a customer since 1991. You're just going to have to take this problem somewhere else because your insurance companies, that aftermarket company, has been blackballed by us. You're not going to get a fair shake from them, and we're not going to be the bearers of bad news. So please come back to us. We want to give you a hug before you leave, but the next 2 weeks of your life are going to be hell. So anyway, thank you for winding me up, Harold. I would have rather you called at the very end of the show, but really and truly, that was a great question, and I'm just teasing you. John, you're up next.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just bought my first diesel pickup, and I've had a couple of people tell me that I should run something called Delo 400 oil.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a synthetic or semi-synthetic? Do you run in your Dodge diesel?
Well, let me answer your question first. Delo is a good oil, but so is Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. Now, let me also explain that Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron all make everybody else's oil. They have the base stock. So they send the base stock to ABC Oil Company, and they take 2 drops of magic lotion and put 2 drops in every gallon. Now it belongs to Magic Lotion Oil. Okay? So I don't pour Delo. I can have my pick. I could do Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66. I choose Chevron because I like them. I like how they stand behind me. I like when it's an oil issue, they say, send us a sample, send it to the lab, and we'll see if the oil broke down. Or we'll see what we can tell you. I also like the delivery service. I like the pricing. I like all of that. So everybody has their own idea. I used to pour Vaveline, and before that I poured Mobil. So Mobil, Vaveline, and Chevron. Really and truly, you use whatever you want, and I'll tell you what I tell my I love my brother, so I'll tell him, get the cheapest oil you can. That's it. If it says Walmart on it, then buy Walmart, because Walmart didn't make that oil. The base stock was made by Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, or Chevron. So, pour Chevron in mine.
Is the Delo 400 a synthetic?
Well, it depends. If it's a 540, it's a synthetic. If it's a 1540, it's a semi-synthetic. That follows most of the time. Usually we can tell a synthetic by the numbers of the weight. So we can't always, but what diesel, you just bought a diesel. This is a new one?
Yeah.
Okay, it's going to call for a 540, or it could call for a 1030. Either one. I would use the weight that's in the owner's manual, but it may be kind of fuzzy. They may say, well, if you're in this climate, then use this. And if it's in the climate, use this. Well, if you go from sea level, which is 1,200 feet in Phoenix, and you're going to drive to Colorado, you're going to hit both places. The wider the gap, the better off you are. So like a 5 weight, 540. A 5 flows like a 5 when it's cold and flows like a 40 when it's hot. Flows and protects, okay? The protection is the same whether it's 5 or at 40, but it flows like a 5 weight and like a 40 weight. So that's what the numbers mean. I've been trained by the very best oil guys in the world, and I don't tout Chevron to you because they pay me. I tout Chevron to you because that's what I use. So I want to put you in a comfort zone.
All right, well, thank you very much. You have a great day.
And same to you, sir. Thank you very much. 602, what the heck's the number, Gil? 602?
508.
508.
0916.
0916. Thank you, Gil. You can't believe what my desk looks like because I've been waving my arms and there's paper everywhere and I lost my show sheet. So, but I've been doing this long enough to know I should have memorized the 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. My panties have been wadded up twice in this show and, I'm going to have to take a couple of aspirins and then probably do what you do, and that's take a half a bottle of whiskey after we're done with this just so that you can recover from the emotional part of this show.
So are you saying it's a good show?
No, I'm not saying it's a good show. I'll let everybody decide for themselves. As you can tell, I'm pretty solid in my opinions. But like I said, I've been working on cars since 1968. I started in a gas station at Broadway and Priest in Tempe. I went to Tempe High School. And today I'm a master tech. I took my first ASC test and I passed six of them, of the eight. I passed six of them in 1981. But you have to pass all eight to be called a master. Otherwise, you're just ASC certified. In 1991, I passed all eight of them, and that's called an ASE Master Certified Technician. I have passed tests until I hit a certain retirement age, and after you've passed so many tests, they give you the word emeritus. And that means you're retired, but you're allowed to keep your label. And so I get to say for the rest of my life, I'm an ASE Master because I've proved myself. So, and I've also run repair shop since 1979. So I've been around the block and I give you the best advice, and it's not serving me, it serves you. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, every Saturday from 10 to 12 right here on 960 KKNT. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. Folks, let me just cover a couple of things. I'm not here because I want to sell you anything. I hope I'm not. I hope you recognize that. I'm here to give you some advice. So real quick, Keith called in and he wanted to know when he should do a tranny service and if they should adjust the bands in the transmission. Alger Stowers owns A&S Transmission. A&S can either stand for Alger and Shelley, his wife, or Automatics and Standards. He won't tell anybody what A&S stands for. I'm going to tell you a quick story. Alger worked for me when he was 16 years old, and he had an old Nova. He was a tall, skinny kid that, you know, my beer bottle weighed more than he. One day he came to me. We have a two-bay gas station, and he says, "Can I work on my car in the gas station this weekend?" I said, "What are you going to do?" And he says, "I'm going to take the automatic out and put a clutch in it." This kid's 16 years old. And I said, "Alger, if that car's here on Monday morning when we open up for repair, I'm going to pull it out, and I'm going to push it into the street. You better be done. Have you got the bell crank? Have you got the bell housing? Have you got the clutch, the pressure plate? Have you got the shifter linkage? Have you got the shifter? Have you got a new drive shaft? Have you got the cross member? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Alger, if you mess this up, I'm going to be so mad at you." He says, "I'm going to work Saturday and Sunday, and I'll be out of your hair." And I said, "Okay, fine." Saturday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, he's laying rubber in front of my house. He works all Friday night. He put the car together. By Saturday at noon, he's laying rubber in front of my house, showing me he has a brand new 4-speed in his car. Today, he owns A&S Transmission. He's in the top two transmission guys I've ever met in all my life. So he's an important guy. And then he texts me, and I will skip the bad words that he used. And he says, "Mr. Salem, by the way, I was 9 years old in 1972, and that's a lie." And then he says there's no bands in Keith's transmission on his Dodge, and which was a 16, one ton, and there's no bands in yours. And so that was the issue, is that the bands, and Alger says there's no bands in either Keith's or mine. Just to cover a couple of things, Harold says that he sees these ads on the TV about car insurance for repair. I went on a tirade about that. I hate those. I don't like dealing with the people, and you're going to get the shaft every time you go in for a repair. They're not going to cover 100% of what they said, and you're going to end up paying a lot more, and you're going to get a part that somebody made in their backyard. And then, John, hopefully I didn't offend any of you guys, wanted to know about oil, and his friends say you need to use this specific oil, and I say nobody cares. Use whatever you want. So those are coming to the thing. Tom Blackwell, Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street at Deer Valley, has been a friend of mine for a long time. He's really good at what he does. He does vintage car, he restores old cars, and he'll change the oil in your wife's car as well. He's the only auto repair shop in the northeast part of the valley, which is Scottsdale and Phoenix, all the way up far north, that I can recommend to you. I'm sorry, I'd like to have more shops to recommend to you, but I can't. Blackwell Automotive. Charlie, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hiya, Mark. Hey, Tommy John's. They're guaranteed not to get your panties in a twirl.
Oh.
Hey, I got a... I heard it on a commercial. Tommy John's. Man, I agree with just 99.99% of everything you're saying there. I like it.
Thank you.
Anyway, Dodge, 2007 diesel.
Okay.
5.9 liters. That year they put in both the 5.9 and the 6.7.
Uh-huh.
It's a 5.9.
Yep.
You know when it's supposed to have the valves adjusted, or are they supposed to be adjusted?
No, I've never seen it in the owner's manual. Mine's a 12 1-ton, and it's got the 6.7. Of all the diesel engines that have ever been made, the 5.9 is the best one. The Dodge 6.7 is good. The Ford 6.0 was the biggest turd in the whole wide world. I'm not afraid to tell you, and just you, Charlie, I've made thousands of dollars working on those 6-liter power strokes on the Ford. I mean to tell you, they break every other day. So, but when you talk about durable. And now the Ford, the 7.3, way back when, is still one of the best motors today. It's the only diesel motor that Ford did today. We're still waiting on the 6.7 on the Ford, or their next motor after the 6-liter. I think it's a 6.7. We're waiting to find out. Your 5.9 is an awesome motor, and I wouldn't be adjusting the valves. Besides, you couldn't hear them clatter anyway, and you know exactly about that. And, of course, my 12 is the 6.7. And I'm not ever going to adjust the valves unless I have to pull the valve covers off, and I might check one or two just to see what the valve lash looks like. I'm not even quite sure that there is an adjustment underneath the valve covers of my 6.7 or your 5.9, but I probably wouldn't plan on doing anything. I'm sorry.
It has a valve lash. The valve lash for intake and exhaust is on the valve cover.
Okay.
That's why I asked, because it's running great.
And
I mean, I only got 200,000 on it, but it runs great.
You can't tell the knock from a diesel and the clatter from a valve are very close to one another. I want to tell you that I firmly believe that you would have an idle problem, a rough idle problem, or a rough acceleration problem if you had a valve that the lash was too big. If it's too tight, then you'll typically have some kind of a serious miss and maybe even a backfire out through the intake or the exhaust. So if it idles smoothly, accelerates smoothly, and there's no blue smoke and everything seems to be fine, then I just wouldn't do it. But if you want to, just follow the specifications and make sure both of the valves the valves you're going to adjust already have lash, which means the cam's on the low side, and go ahead and do it. You're going to get your hands really dirty, and your wife's not going to go to dinner with you for a month because you'll never get the diesel oil out of your hands.
I've been married 45 years. She don't like me anyway.
You know, you and I were...
It is idling in. What was that?
Go ahead. You're getting us both in trouble.
It is idling very rough. And I'm trying not to get you in trouble, and she's not listening to me, so I'm okay.
You know what? I want you.
It is idling rough.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I want you to stop by.
I didn't mean to talk over you.
Harbor Freight and buy a temperature gun. Okay. And then get it warmed up really good and let it idle and gun the exhaust manifold at each one of the cylinders and see if they're all pretty much the same or if you've got one that's different. And that's how
some
of the
new
that's a great idea.
The new technology appears. that we're going to use a temperature gun, because if the cylinder's not hitting, then there won't be heat on that exhaust manifold. So I think you start there. Then I think you pull the valve covers, touch some of the rockers, and see if you can find the clatter. I wouldn't plan on doing all of them. I'd just do the one you need. Okay?
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, it idles rough, but, man, does it run down the road.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting great mileage. It pulls hard if I do hook up to a trailer. But just idles, and
okay.
It doesn't bother me at all. But
okay. One thing I want you to do, I want you to call Alan at 480-598-1234. Just remember 480-598, and then the rest of it, 1234. Ask him about your rough idle 5.9. He might be able to have an idea. When it comes to good repair shops, Mesa has one. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They've been around since 1970. I know Brian and Thelma, and I know their parents. And both of their families have been involved in the gasoline and auto repair business in Mesa when the roads were still dirt. So they've been around a long time. So they're on Main Street just east of Stapley, Thompson's Auto Repair, the only shop in Mesa. There's other shops in Mesa that are good, but it's the only one that Mark Salem chooses to recommend. Got three callers. We got Alan, Bob, and Ron. But let's do Alan. Alan, you're first.
Hey, did you just try to call me? You must have a diesel question.
I do. I didn't think I would get to you. Alan is my son. I admit he's my son when he's being a good boy. Okay, here's what I got. I've got Charlie with a 07 diesel, a Dodge with a 5.9, and it idles rough. So I told him I thought maybe we should gun the exhaust manifold to see if we can find a cold one. He wanted to do a valve adjustment because the valve specs are written on the valve cover, and I told him I didn't think that's where I would start. So you pick up from there.
You can start depending on how long the valve adjustment's been. You can always start there. I can't remember the last time a valve adjustment fixed a misfired idle. They would have to be really, really out of adjustment in order to do that. My guess is it's going to be an injector, which, you know, normally they are, obviously, depending on mileage and how long when was the last time injectors were replaced. We try to do them in sets if at all possible, but my guess is going to be an injector.
Okay, and you know what? You bring up a good point that I missed completely. He said it was an intermittent problem, or I'm pretty sure he said it was intermittent, and if it was, then it might be an injector. But even if he said it was there all the time, and I think he said that it misses at idle, it runs rough at idle, and then on acceleration. So the valve adjustment part bothered me because I didn't know that we fixed them with valve adjustments, but I'm glad to hear what you said.
I mean, a valve adjustment is, you know, if it's been 225,000 miles, a valve adjustment, but keep in mind every time you do the injectors, so if the injectors have been done before the valve adjustment, you have to take off the rocker arms and readjust the valve. So basically you get a valve adjustment also with an injector.
Okay.
But if it's an intermittent issue, I mean, if it were my customer, I would tell them, this is going to sound weird, but this is what I've been telling, is put a quart of tranny fluid in the fuel tank. And that's been those little borderline misfires on diesels. We've been putting a quart of transmission fluid in the fuel tank, and that's been helping some people, not helping other people. Got a good buddy of mine, Matt Carr, you know him.
Mm-hmm.
He had injectors start making noise on his Duramax at like 137. He just rolled 300,000 miles, and we still haven't done injectors. And that was 5 years ago, and he uses a quart every fill-up.
Okay.
So I would tell him to start there first and see if that helps at all.
Okay, we're looking for change. So he puts a quart of tranny fluid in it, and it should change it. And if that's the case, it's likely to be an injector. Okay?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for calling me back. Hopefully you're still around when we were talking about Charlie, but thank you very much, Alan, for calling me back. He has a little bit more time with the diesels than his old man does. Bob, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Mark, I got in a discussion with someone about oil life monitor, oil changes, and he said if you let your oil life go to 0%, that's just designed by the manufacturers to get your engine out of warranty, and you're never going to make it. Unless you're changing it like 15 to 20% oil life left.
Yeah, no, I disagree with that for a variety of reasons. First of all, I don't know where your oil monitor was when you come in. So if you wanted to change your oil monitor and reset it, then go right ahead. But they're not going to plug anything into your car to tell you that you're 1% past the zero point. I disagree with that. I've never heard of that. I've never heard of anybody having that problem. But if you come in and you're 1,000 miles past your oil and it's 2 quarts low and you've cooked the motor, all the totality of all of that, but it doesn't make any difference. You still cooked the motor. The totality of all of that would give you a tough time at any repair shop. So I don't agree with that. I wouldn't worry about that. If you want to run it down to zero, who cares? There's been times I go past it, you know, 10%. I mean, I go past it. I might be, it might not be convenient for me to take it back down to the valley and have Alan change the oil. So I would forget about that. I would forget about that. But thank you for bringing that up. I know I'm going to be late on this, but I'm going to talk to Ron for just a second. Ron, give me your question real quick, and then I need to take a break, okay?
Okay. I have a 2000 Silverado, have trouble getting through the emissions. I have a EVAP monitor flashing. I have a little scan tool. I want to know if I can take it back. I've done a couple drive cycles, and I want to know if I can take it back to emissions.
You can take it back as much as you want, to be honest with you. But I got some questions, so I'm going to take a break because I'm supposed to be out at 40. And when I come back, you'll be my first caller. And we got open line 602-508-0960, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Well, thank you for spending your Saturday with me, but we're not done. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I want to tell you real quick about Strictly Diesel. He does good diesel work. He's up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. I've known Nate for a long time. He kind of covers that north area, and so if you're anywhere north of the river almost, then Strictly Diesel might be your closest place. If you have a complaint about the show, Mark with a K at marksalem.com. That comes directly to me. I'm the one that handles that account. So if there's a problem and you want to comment or if you want to chew on my tail end for a while, that's the way you do it, Mark at marksalem.com. And if you want me to call you, I will, and we're not going to have a bad conversation. We'll have a discussion. Also, Alger called back, and I was telling you the joke about Himalayan rubber in front of my house when he was 16 years old, and he says, no, it wasn't 72, it was 1979. So I'm sorry, Alger. It was 1979 or 1980. He says, I was only 6 years old in 1972, or whatever he said. So, all right, I fixed it for you, Alger. I need to talk real quick about Charlie. Charlie, we talked about your valve adjustment. Alan said put some transmission fluid in the tank. That's a diagnostic process, so we'll know if that makes it better. And that'll at least help us eliminate your valve adjustment stuff. Who have we? Oh, we got, do we have Ron? Yeah, Ron we have left over, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Ron, let me tell you, your little scanner, your little code reader is just step one. It's telling you that you have a fever, and it thinks it's in the evaporative system. You know that you have to fix the evaporative system in order to pass emissions, because the first thing they're going to do is look at the monitors. Because in the old days, we used to disconnect the battery cable, clear the check engine light, and they would pass us. But today we have these timers in the computer, and they're not going to clear the code till they see the problem not exist 40 times in a row or something like that. The evaporative system is a very difficult system to diagnose. What did you do to fix it?
All I've done was do the drive cycles. What it started was I had the battery disconnected for like 6 months.
Okay. How many miles on it have you had since you failed emissions?
Probably 150 miles.
I think you're going to need more than that, but I also think that you can go back and try to do it. The fact that you took it in so quickly after you put the battery cable back on has all the markings of what we did in the 70s and in the 80s. We disconnect the battery cable, run it through emissions. It passed, but it really shouldn't have passed. because all we did is clear the memory, and the computer needs to see it. For instance, the computer needs to see the problem 5 times in a row, and then it turns on the light. Well, if you can take your car in when it only has 2 times, then you'll pass. That's kind of the deal. Forget the drive cycle. Just drive it normally. And the drive cycle, as you well know, is very difficult to do. You need to have your wife sitting next to you. You need to do it on Sunday morning, and you need to follow the drive cycle as she yells at you that you're supposed to idle for 3 minutes. So you can go in and just say to them, I want to wait in line, and I want you to tell me if the drive cycle has been reset, and if it has, you're home free. Do you have a garage that you deal with?
No.
Okay. What part of town do you live in?
Northwest Valley.
Okay. I'd go over to, I'd go to Harker's. I'd call Harker's Automotive and 38th Avenue and Indian School. It's a little south of you. And ask them if they would be, how much they would charge you to check to see if your monitors had been reset. Because it takes a sophisticated piece of equipment to do that. So, and then you can say, I have a naked picture of Mark Salem. Will that suffice? And I think they'll give you like a $6 discount for something like that. But anyway, that's what I would do, is I would have them check the monitor and see if they've been set. And then if so, go straight to emissions and you'll be fine. Okay?
If I go to emissions and I fail again, is there a charge for that? Then?
You know, I don't know the answer, but I don't think so. But there may be. It seems to me that when we do an emissions repair, if we'll try to do the monitors or we'll give it to the customer and then we'll take it back, and if we fail, it seems to me that there's a charge that we typically eat. But I just, I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry. I don't, but I get on their website and see what they say. But in the monitor situation, they're not going to do a tailpipe test. They're just going to plug in. And they'll look real quick and see if the monitors have been reset. And if it has, boom, you're out of there. So just call them and ask them. That's a great question. And then if you would tell me next week, I'd like to know the answer, okay?
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Jerry, you're up next. How can I help you?
Oh, good morning, Mark. I listen all the time, and what I hear you saying is there's weeping and seeping and leaking. And can you define some of that? Because weeping and seeping sounds very close to the same thing to me. And at what point do you actually act on that repair?
And it's very, you're right, you bring up a good point. It's very lucrative for me to say, Jerry, I did your oil change on your car. And I, you know, Jerry, we got some seeping from that rear main seal. You're going to need to address this. And if that seal blows out completely, it'll lose all the oil before you can turn on the red light, before the red light comes on, and you're going to smoke the motor. So even though it's weeping or it's seeping or whatever, you kind of need to address it. That's what I object to. It's the weeping and seeping words that they use to create the perception that something needs to be done. My truck at 130,000 miles is going to have some weeping and seeping on the bottom of it in at least one or two places. Maybe the speedometer gear where there's an O-ring is weeping. Weeping is just the sign of oil, oil mist, and it's got some dirt on it. That's all it is. So there's you need leaking. And when there's leaking, you say, well, walk out here and tell me where on the hood of the car. Is it in the windshield? And you're standing by the driver's side front tire. Is it in the windshield? Is it in the middle of the hood? Is it right behind the headlights? Where is the leak on the ground that you want to fix? And that's where they go from the weeping and the seeping to, well, it's not bad enough for you to see, but it's still something you need to have done. So I hate weeping and seeping. I don't let my staff use that. It's either leaking on the ground or it ain't. And you can't possibly sell somebody a rear main seal for $800 because we have to separate the transmission from the engine. You can't sell them something. You have to say, well, have you got anything on the ground? Yes. What color is it? Brown. How often? Well, I clean up the leak about once a month. How big is it? Oh, maybe half the size of a dollar bill. Is it like right underneath the front of the windshield? Yeah. Okay, well, we saw that the rear main seal's leaking. You can either fix it or not. It's a big bill, and here's the amount. But we found it when we did your oil change, and we saw that it was leaking. So you have an associated leak. 1 and 1 equals 2. We're done. Does that make sense?
it does make sense. Can I just elaborate a little bit?
Sure.
I've got a radiator that when it sticks, I don't have anything that hits the ground. I see a little bit of wet, but, I mean, on the spot on the radiator. But it seems to drip a bit more after it's been under pressure and has run for a while. But I don't really get a puddle underneath there at all.
Okay, that's different.
So I'm debating, do I replace it or not?
Yes, that's different. The radiator is going to be different than the engine because we got 8 quarts of oil, and that whatever's leaking on your radiator is going to get worse real fast. And that crack's going to get bigger, and you hope that the coolant will leak underneath the hood. You hope it'll hit the exhaust and turn white. You hope that the mist will come in front of the windshield to tell you that you're in trouble. But when you can physically see, when you can visually see, I should say, a coolant leak on your radiator, I don't want you to ignore that. I want you to have a new radiator put in. Now, here's what we do. We take the radiator cap off and we hook up a pressure sensor, a pressure tester to it. So we hook up this cap device, we look at the cap, and it's a 14-pound cap. So we pump up 14 pounds of air pressure and we walk away. So we are putting it under a high pressure as if the motor was completely warmed up. So we do your oil change, and when we drop it down on the ground, there might be there's coolant on the ground, and with pressure, and if the motor's already warm, it'll be half of a dollar bill. And I just don't think that the risk, I think the risk is huge in that scenario. So I'm glad you brought that up, because when it comes to a cooling system, I'm going to change my mind. We need to deal with those kinds of weeping and seeping, because they're going to get worse fast. As far as an oil leak is concerned, I still stand by my original stupid idea.
Yeah, well, it's the differentiation between radiator and coolant. Between radiator and oil is what I was kind of looking for. I guess.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're right. There is a distinction there. Yeah. But anyway, thank you for calling. There's a lot of things. Now, I want to tell you something. There's also good things in our industry. I have lots of guys that tell me, you know, Mrs. Jones, you've got this little oil leak at the back, and do you see anything on the ground? No. Just keep an eye on it. That's all. Well, how will I know? Well, the leak will get bigger. And when it gets the size of, a silver dollar or half of a dollar bill, then we need to address it. But for right now, Mrs. Jones, I noticed that your car is 10 years old and it only has 40,000 miles on it. So I'm not real concerned about this right now. I don't know how long it's. But, if I took it to Tucson and back, I probably would be able to fix it. It might just need a couple of heat cycles. We need to bring it up to heat and then let it cool down. And Mrs. Jones, all you do is drive from your house to Circle K to get your beer and come home. So that's probably the reason why we need to do that. See the difference? That's the difference. Now, if you have a bad oil leak, the red light's going to come on, and it's going to give you a warning on the dash. A cooling system is often in stress by the time you get a warning, and you hope that the warning is that you've got steam and coolant on the windshield. And so you've got something that's been compromised underneath the hood, and we got a lot of coolant spraying it around underneath the hood, and it's going to hit your windshield. But if it's the lower radiator hose or the bottom of the radiator, you may not see anything. Then you'll see an overheat light, and if you're like everybody else, you say to yourself, well, I only 2 or 3 miles from home, I can make it. Well, I can't tell you how many people we've had to call and say, you blew the head gasket out of this little 4-cylinder Honda, and it's going to cost you $1,100 to pull the head, resurface the head, put a new head gasket on it, and we hope that there's no piston damage or scored cylinders when we get the head off. And it's all and we're not going to say this, but it's all because you tried to go home. A tow truck would have been cheaper. It would have been cheaper. You got steam all over the windshield. You got a red light on the dash. Pull over. Call the tow truck. That's really what it's all about. So you have to just kind of be careful about that. Gil, anybody else before I continue to rant?
Yes, so we have Leonard.
Leonard, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Mark, I'm an original buyer owner of a Buick. It's 19 years old. I kind of order to go through emissions, but I have a locking gas cap. So what I did years previous to that, I would always take off the original cap to put on axle that would go through an emissions figure made my locking gap basket wouldn't work. So I did that, put the original valve back on there, and it went through emissions, and it didn't pass. So the guy took another gas cap, another fuel cap, and put it on there because it was giving fumes off the vent there. So he put another cap on there so it would pass. My question is, why is it they don't do anything? That's all they do is check the gas cap for fumes, and that's nothing else that they do.
Yes.
Why is that?
We have a system called an evaporative system, and we want to suck the fumes off the gas tank and send them forward to the engine again. And so we want that gas cap to be pretty much airtight. On the very top of the fuel tank, there's a nipple, and then we have a line that goes forward, and it goes through a purge valve, and it goes through all these different switches. And at the appropriate time, we open up the valve, suck all the fumes off the top of the tank, and then shut it. So,
well, I understand, but why is that the only thing they do for emissions? They didn't do anything else. They don't run a dynamometer. They don't open a hood. They don't check nothing. All they do is check the gas cap.
Okay, I've never seen that before. I'm not doubting your word. I've never seen that before. They're plugging into the assembly line data link, the ADL, underneath the hood. And they're
They did that. But under the dashboard, they plugged.
Okay. Well, first of all, your car doesn't need the dyno. Your computer's going to tell on you. They're going to plug in underneath the dash. It's not going to have an evaporative code. It's not going to have any codes. And so they know it's code. Then they're going to check your gas cap. So it's a two-part process. Let's plug into his car and see if his car's going to tell on him. Oh, there's no codes. There's no computer's not waving its hand saying, I see something, I see something. So the only thing the computer really can't see is the gas cap. We're going to check that. Ah, you failed. So it's not uncommon for the process to look like what you just said it did. But the gas cap is... Now, you took the locking off there. Put the locking back on. See what happens next time. What do you got to lose?
I have to get a new FOB. Do you know any place I can get one checked out? Because the Buick dealer wants $180 to program it. Do you know any place I can get that?
Say that again?
Program.
Okay, hold on. I got to go, but here, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. Give me your phone number and I'll call you back.